Philadelphia Union, San Jose Earthquake, DC United, Los Angeles Galaxy,
Beach Pass,
Colorado Rapids, Vancouver Whitecaps, Orlando City SC, Montreal Impact, NYCFC, Seattle Sounders.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
Do yourself a favor. Go to pitchpass.com. Our episode we posted earlier this week with John Strong, Fox Sports. John Strong was just fantastic. He had so much insights and things that I hadn't considered, and maybe you didn't consider as well about the league, about CONCACAF Champions League. His views on Confederations Cup totally changed my mind about whether it's an important tournament or not. Make sure you download that episode at pitchpass.com. You get two this week to make up for the fact that we took 2 weeks off. John Strong's up and available at pitchpass.com. And thank you very much for downloading this, the second of them as well. Love the candor on this guy. And as always, he's just having the usual Bobby Boswell season, which is slow, very slow in some cases, steady, and just one of the top defenders in MLS. I'm going to go out on a limb and say maybe one of the top defenders in MLS history. He's getting to that point, if you didn't realize. He's got 10 years in the league now. Always a great time when Bobby joins the show, and he joins us right now. Only one guest this episode, Bobby, so we got all the time in the world.
The last time we did an hour or something, Kyle never let me live it down. So I think he wants me to shut up a little more and be a little more to the point. So
it's our first time having you on this year, though. Last year, maybe the last time you were on, I don't even remember. It was World Cup, and there's not as much. I mean, you know, you were fantastic breaking down the World Cup for us, but we don't need that this time. So it shouldn't be as long just because of that.
I got you.
Let's start with this past weekend. You know, when you get two top level MLS upper echelon defensive squads like DC United and Real Salt Lake together, you obviously are expecting what we got over the weekend, correct?
I've never been a part of anything like that in my life, and no one in my locker room has. And for good reason. It was pretty crazy out there.
It was like rec league U7 stuff with all the goals bouncing in. It was nice.
Yeah, I think it was entertaining.
I said nice.
Know, and we were on the right end of that entertaining. But at the same time, sometimes wins can mask bigger problems, and we keep starting these games off poorly, and I think that's our coach's nightmare. But to be fair, we keep showing good resolve and coming back and winning. I think the biggest thing is come playoff time. If you give a team a couple goal lead, you probably won't find yourself playing the next weekend. So we're aware of that, and we're trying to figure out a way to start games better. But you can't fault our guys for not putting the effort in to get back into the game and then go out and win it.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing. There's always that other side of the coin of, well, we won, but I agree with you. And you know, once we get to lockdown, fall, and playoff times, clubs aren't going to let you off the hook after you go down two goals. It's weird though, because you went down 2-0 in the last two matches against two vastly different teams, and were able to come back in both of them. Afterwards, I know Ben is happy for the win, but is there a, come on, guys, what do we need to do to start this match when it's 0-0-0 rather than 15 minutes in?
Yeah, I think, you know, to be honest with you, we've given up a lot of early goals, not just the last two games, but after the Philadelphia game, we kind of had a coming to Jesus moments, you know. We had all kinds of meetings, and we had our brain coach or whatever you want, a sports psychologist came in, and we almost put too much emphasis on it, and to come out and do it again, you know, it's so hard to, it defies, you know, any kind of logic. We're planning and trying to prevent that exact thing from happening, and it does. So going forward, I don't know. It's like, is there any possible way that it could happen again? I'm sure there is, but we're in our heads trying to get back to keeping shutouts, and you know, at the same time trying to keep scoring goals, because that's also that's a big plus. I think overnight we went from bottom five in the league in goals scored to top five in the league just from one game. So that goes to show you how hard goals are to come by. So we're glad that we're scoring. We're just not happy that we're giving up so many as well.
It was awesome that you guys and most of the other teams in MLS, but not all, which I thought was kind of interesting, did that the special jersey numbers. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, make sure you tune into an MLS match at some point over the course of the next month. Most of the clubs will have a different looking jersey number on the back, and it is a lot of them are doing their season ticket holders. You were blessed to have a picture of me on the back of your jersey, as well as anybody else who on DC United was wearing the number 3. I submitted a picture. Did you happen to find it?
I did. I found it before the game. You're about midway down, right in the middle of the 3. you know, it's good product placement. I'm sure it'll scare a lot of kids, but
yep.
As an adult, it didn't really bother me too much. But yeah, it was quite exciting to see you on there, to see a face that I knew. That was kind of cool.
Did the wonk eye throw you off at all?
I think it was the creeper stash.
The mustache? Okay. There was a lot to dislike about that photo, and I was just wondering what the big thing for you was.
The funniest part is that I missed it the first time around, and then of all the people, Chris Pontius, he used some context clues and who you said on Twitter who would be involved in the shirt and figured out it was in the 3. That's probably the first and only time Chris Pontius has ever had a brilliant idea.
Yeah, I didn't know he was smart.
Yeah, well, even a blind dog. But yeah, we looked and it was right there, right in front of me the whole time. You know, and it was cool. You know, it's cool that they do that for the fans. It makes the jerseys a little more unique. And you know, you play a lot of games in this league. You don't have a whole lot of different jerseys. So this will definitely be one that I myself would want for my collection. So you'll be a part of my my history for the rest of my life. So congrats on that.
Well, you know, and I bring up me to kind of give you what the outlet to what you just did, which is, you know, it is cool. And it was kind of fun for me knowing that you guys – it wasn't just, all right, here are the jerseys for today. Throw them on. We're walking out. You guys, and I'm sure everybody else in the locker room did the same thing where you went over your numbers, no matter 1 through 9, and looked through and just took a glance, even if it was just a casual glance, at some of the faces on your jerseys for the next month.
Yeah, no, there are guys have noticed that there's some fans repeat themselves. And, I mean, everyone, you're right, everyone does look at it. And, you know, some people look for people they know, and other guys are just, you know, it is different, and it breaks up. Like I said, there's a lot of monotony and what we do, the day-to-day stuff. So to have a unique jersey like that, it's kind of cool, not just for the fans, but it's cool for us too.
I'd like to lock in once and for all with you on your official hashtag. Now, obviously, the first word is white. But over the years, you've changed the player that you are trying to emulate. And I remember last year during the World Cup, you weren't white. You were hashtag Tan Mueller. So, I feel like as you get older, you're making more, rampaging runs, into the box, which seems like it would be, counterintuitive to a man who's getting older, but you are doing it. With Pirlo in the league now, are you still hashtag white Pirlo? Are you still hashtag Tam Mueller? What do we do when you make these runs up from the back into the action, into the play?
Well, I don't know. My most recent one, and this is just based on I get tagged in these things, people have been calling me the white Rooney. And
But you are not whiter than Rooney.
Well, they just call me the white Rooney, and I think it has something to do with him getting new hair. You know, he did don the captain's armband every once in a while, and I don't know. Maybe they're saying that I'm not doing well. I'm not really sure what the intention of the posts are, but I'll take it. You know, Wayne Rooney, he's had a pretty remarkable career so far. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not really
Well, you were White Pirlo at one point, and here's the irony of it. Pirlo is now in the league. You guys will see them, I believe, twice more before the end of the year. Will there be a conversation at some point, either pregame or during the match, of, hey, by the way, you're looking at hashtag White Pirlo. Nice to meet you, regular Pirlo.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure he probably already knows.
Yeah, it's true. Great point.
I mean, he has ears. He's definitely heard this podcast before. So I definitely think he'll know. I just, you know, they say he's the most interesting man in the world. He's got all kinds of, you know, no party, no Pirlo, no party things. So he's got some of his own stuff going on. I'm not sure if, you know, he'll accuse me of trademark infringement or anything, but to be honest with you, I've kind of moved on. So I hope it's going to be a little awkward if he brings it up. I'm, you know, I was White Gooch, you know.
Yeah,
in my mind, right after that. So yeah, that's old news to me.
That's a great point. It's great. So we'll stick with White Rooney. And, you know, I say it, and I don't know if it started as a joke or as something to chuckle at, but I got to be honest with you, and I mentioned it when we first started talking about it. Your runs now, they're becoming like a consistent thing. And I remember a young Bobby Boswell was basically anchored to the back line. I don't remember if it was last match or if against the Union, you had a play where you were in the box, the ball came to you, you were going away from goal, and you actually laid it off to an oncoming United player. And I was like, dude, that's like an offensive play right there. That's not you just charging forward. That's not you trying to get on end of a header. That's you creating offense.
Yeah, well, I always black out in those moments, so I don't really remember the exact place you're talking about. But, you know, to be honest, we do a lot of – we don't work a whole lot – this is going to backfire. We don't work a whole lot individually on defensive things with our team.
No, what?
Shock. We do, however, do a lot of finishing. And, you know, if you want to be involved in post-practice, extracurriculars, you have to find yourself, you know, like today I worked on crossing from the right side just because I thought I could help out there, and that's what I worked on. So, you know, your game's always improving in some way or the other, and it happens to be that when I want to jump in the post-practice stuff, it's usually a finishing drill, and a lot of it's, you know, quick touches. They play the ball into you, and so maybe that's some of it. And I also think, you know, before when you're talking about how I used to play before, we played three men in the back, so there wasn't a whole lot of opportunity.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's totally
right.
Yeah,
but now with four, you know, you can get forward. But I tried a little bit of that in Houston, and all it takes is, you know, I dribbled out of the back once, got forward, we lost the ball, and they came right down and scored. We played Columbus at home, and Kinnear just said, what were you thinking on that? You're not an attacking player, so you have to be really careful because your job is not to go contribute to the offense a whole lot. Okay. Your job is to put out fire. So it's fun and everyone enjoys it, but at the end of the day, my job is to be in the back.
Agreed. And, you know, all joking aside, first off, I'll pay you a very high compliment, and it's something that I didn't notice as I was a less informed soccer watcher. But your positioning is magnificent, and I feel like that's been a big key to the fact that as you age, there's been little to no drop-off in your performance. You just seem like you have a really great sense of where you are on the pitch and where the guys you should be defending are on the pitch. In going forward, it's very, very disruptive when a center back decides to make this run. And it's always, to me, exciting because you always see everybody looking around on the other team going, okay, who's got him? He's moving forward. And is it a thing as you've gotten older where, okay, now I know where to pick my spots. I know this is the time to do it. I know that maybe the defensive midfielder is out of position and this is going to really cause some disruptions for some of our offensive guys to get into better positions.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is if I'm usually going forward, it means I've intercepted the ball, you know, usually from a defensive player, defensive midfielder, and, you know, an entry ball. And, you know, for me, once you do that, your momentum's already carrying you. And it's not one of those things where I've just decided I'm going to go. Usually once the wheels get going, it's a little hard to slow the train down. So So I just keep going. Sometimes, you know, I don't do anything. I just dribble and look for someone to lay it off to. But if I feel like it's a big momentum shift where we've got numbers, then I figure, hey, I'll run in the box. And I always joke around and I act like I want the ball. But I always usually am yelling, like, play the other, you know, if it's a forward or a attacking midfielder running on the other side, I'm usually yelling for them to get the ball just because they're the ones that are going to show their world-class finishing ability in front of the goal, not myself. But hopefully one of these days I can get a goal off one of these runs. That would be very nice, but I'm not really too concerned with it.
As I said, we had John Strong on earlier in the week on the show, Fox Sports 1 analyst, MLS point guy, but also getting ready for CONCACAF Champions League. I asked him a couple of questions about CONCACAF Champions League and the awesomely chaotic Champions League that is CONCACAF Champions League. And we brought up you guys, your Houston Dynamo teams of yesteryear, as one of the examples of how crazy CONCACAF Champions League is. In my mind, that team that you guys had was built for a CONCACAF Champions League run. Didn't happen. And then meantime, last year, Montreal, who wasn't that great in the league, turns out to be 45 minutes away from winning the whole thing. How can you prepare for a tournament that is that random and chaotic?
You know, that tournament, I'm not a big fan of it just for so many reasons, but I understand the allure behind it. And, you know, I think that MLS is getting closer and closer.
Well, what's the number one reason? What's the number one reason you're not a fan of it without, you know, so you don't have to go into a laundry list of things?
It's not just one. I mean, it's a whole thing of them. But
okay, but well, tie
you know,
two.
It's tough. It's a tough tournament to do well in because you're right now we're going to go try to qualify for it, and we're coming to the end of our season, so we're in good form. Then if we do well,
yes,
we're going to enter the hardest part of the tournament at the beginning of the year, the following season, with new teammates and new players, and you know not. You know, our first game this year, where we got walloped, was a guy coming off. They rushed him back from an Achilles injury on our goalie, and then that was the first game I had played, First game I played with Steve Birnbaum as my partner in the back because of he was with national team and injuries, and for me, you know, that's why we give up so many goals. It's a tough thing to do. To go into that tournament, and we lost one game, and that was it. Like, although we had a chance at home, and people can say, "Oh, that team wasn't that great or anything," but eventually, we still would have, had we gotten out of that game and had we beaten Montreal, we still would have played a Mexican powerhouse in the final. And you saw it. They don't need two games to beat you. They just need a half, and it's over. And that's the reality of it. So you got the refereeing. I thought that the best chance a team could win it would be a team from Canada out of MLS because there's a good chance they might have an American ref in the middle.
Oh.
Which is to say, you know, if we play in that tournament, we're probably getting a ref that maybe doesn't speak English and it's tough. You know, it's tough to go when you're used to a style of play and used to a style of reffing to go have a different style of play with a different style of refs, and then you play an experienced group of guys that know how to really work a ref over of that caliber. It's a tough tournament to win, and it's a tough tournament to do well in, and I understand it. I probably played more games than anyone in our league or been involved in more games than anyone in our league in that tournament, and it has gotten better, you know, the accommodations and the quality of the playing surface, and, you know, I have some friends that work for CONCACAF, so I'm not trying to take a dig at them. I'm not necessarily a fan of it because it's a tough thing to do. You got to travel a lot, come back to play MLS, and then you start your season early for a tournament. Like, look at Montreal. They got all the way to the final and they have nothing to really show for it other than a great couple performances. And now they're going to have to, in the next, you know, they're playing tonight, but they're going to try to catch up at middle of the season to try to make the playoff run while they're, you know, like it always comes back to bite you at some point is what I'm saying. It always, you know, it's a tough thing to do. to add games to your season, your schedule, and expect results both that and in the MLS.
Is it well? And the big takeaway, by the way, Bobby, that I got from that entire thing was you are in favor of MLS moving to a winter schedule. So thank you for going.
I'm
on,
in favor of what? Sorry,
of MLS going to a winter schedule. So thank you for going on record for that.
yeah, that's pretty much verbatim what I said.
In talking with players around the league, is it important for, I don't want to say the players, do the players feel it's important for the league's reputation to have a winner of that tournament at some point in the next few years?
Yeah, well that's the thing, right? And it's not just players. The even bigger one is the coaches want to win it. You know, they want to be, because now everyone's starting to get closer, and you know, teams are showing better, and I think really it just says that the depth of our league is getting better, and that you can either play your starters or even play kind of a mixed group of guys and still get results in a lot of the games. And qualify, and then once you qualify, it's a crapshoot, you know, at that point. But I think everyone wants to be the first coach. You know, obviously for the players, it would be awesome, you know, to be able to do that. But I think the coaches and the organizations want to win it more, just as much, if not more, than the players, just because they want to be the first ones. You don't have a chance a lot in your career to say you've won something, you know, for the first time. This would be the big one for a lot of people.
You want to talk CBA?
Do I want to talk what?
CBA.
CBA, we can, yeah.
Well, I actually would, if you had said, you know what, I don't really feel like it. Normally, I don't let people wiggle out of that, but I would let you wiggle out of it just because it's been back in the news, and for you, maybe it's something that's done and put to bed, and you're just looking to move on.
I mean, I've been a part of it for a while.
Yeah.
And you know, I have interesting opinions about it. But I think, you know, people who don't, you know, you gotta be careful with people who don't understand what went on or what happened. And not just people that write on Twitter, but you know, there were people that were involved in some of the meetings and negotiations that weren't there for the last 4 or 5 years. That make comments that I don't agree with either. So it's interesting how it all went down. But I, as a player that's been a part of this whole thing, at the, you know, going into these meetings, we had said that we wanted some form of free agency on the board, and we got that. Being as limited as it is, there's some form of it. So our goal was achieved, and I don't really understand how anyone could think that's, if you try to set your goals and achieve it, I don't see how that's not a success.
So two things before I ask a follow-up on that. Number one, and correct me if I'm wrong, Bobby is intimately aware of what was going on. You've been a union rep for a number of years. You are in D.C. where the last round of negotiations took place, so it's not like you had to fly cross country or anything. You were here for all the meetings because you could be here for all the meetings. And then number two, well, I don't even remember what number two was, but that's the big thing. And oh, the number two thing for me was, as a guy, and I've said this to a couple of other players I've had on who have been union reps, as a union man myself here at the radio station, I also understand what it is like to negotiate as a union against a corporation, and you can debate on whether it's a multi-million, multi-billion dollar corporation or not. And you're just not going to throw stuff down and then pull stuff out, and then it's a dance, and you're not going to get everything you want in a negotiation. So with those two things in mind, my follow-up to you is, was that the number one goal and the one, I guess, thing that we as players weren't going to move on, which was free agency?
There were, you know, not to get too specific.
Of course.
There were, you know, a couple of points that we had, you know, some really hard stances on. And, free agency was definitely the, you know, that was the big one. And, you know, there was obviously anytime you have a lot of financial stuff out there, there's, you know, we had a couple of, and there's so many different things, as you probably know, that go into it. And we spent so much time on these little ones, and then it came to the, you know, towards the end of it all, and then we try to hash the big ones out. And, you know, it's all tactics from both sides. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, the idea, in my opinion, is people always say, oh, is it a win-win?
It's never.
There's really no such, there's no such thing as a win-win. I think if you, to look at it kind of pessimistically, if both sides leave kind of thinking the other side maybe got the better end, or, you know, they, or vice versa, if you think you got the better deal and the other side thought that, then I think maybe you actually achieved your goal.
Agreed.
You know, it's not, we're not out, we weren't out to bankrupt the league or to ruin the league. We want to grow with the league, and we just wanted to be a part of that and compensated for that and have some more choices in the process and be better, taken care of better. And they obviously didn't want to give too much that it ends up being an incident, a thing like the old NASL, where the league ends up, you know, writing too many checks that they can't cash and all that. So we understood it, and I think they understood it. You know, there was some heated stuff here and there, but from what I've heard from both sides is, you know, no one seemed like overly thrilled about it, but no one seemed too upset about it. So I think that means that we probably achieved something that was actually good for the league, you know, which is what we wanted to all be a part of.
Two last things on this. And one of them is, I don't know where this was came from, but the Players Union Strike Fund was kind of released, quasi released. And it didn't seem like it was enough to cover a strike. And I know everybody has to be on board, and it seemed as if you guys were pretty solid, had some solidarity on, look, if we need to do this, we need to do this, from guys like Robbie Keane down to the minimum guys. Was it just not feasible at this point to walk out? And if no, at the end of a 5-year deal,
strike fund,
go ahead.
The strike fund was not to cover our the strike fund was to cover our insurance for our families, so that if we walked, we would still be able to have Cobra or some kind of insurance without work. So it wasn't, you know, it's not like Major League Baseball where they have enough money that if they struck, they could still pay every player. That was never the goal, and we understood that. I think the biggest thing was that was money that, you know, we had allotted, so that guys, whether, you know, we talked about this for so long and told guys to prepare for, you know, at least 6 months, you know, potentially of a work stoppage, and to have a plan and all this other stuff. And guys seemed like they were on board, but just to be precautionary, we agreed to withhold money with the dues and stuff, so that guys could, you know, that they could have their insurance covered, whether they planned for that or not, which is, we thought was very vital. So, you know, that was that. It wasn't like we thought,
we're all getting paid while we're out too.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, we were prepared for a strike, because most of the guys in the league, you know, it's not like we're making millions of dollars and we're going out and have all these expensive houses and cars and all that stuff. Like we know how to get by, you know, because everyone's kind of gone through that first contract where they had to get by. And so guys know what they have to do. And I feel like we were prepared, you know, we were really well prepared for that should it happen. And, you know, luckily it didn't come to that, but I wasn't really worried about our group. I think that everyone understood what it was, and it is what it is.
Without getting into too much specifics of what went on during negotiations, but on the league side, all we heard, and we still continue to hear, about how much money the league is losing. Does it frustrate you as a player to hear that sort of talk, and then see how much money is being splashed out on everything that's happened in the last month as far as the transfer window is concerned?
No, because to me, that's ownership. That's owners in those places choosing to spend money, which is good for the league. You know, you can't tell me that Giovinco hasn't been a good, you know, hasn't brought more good to this league through that whole process.
Been fantastic.
And so my thing is it's ownerships, and you know, we have different. Everyone has different views on it, but and our idea is that, you know, if clubs and teams want to go out and spend more money and make their players' lives better, that's just going to make that team more appealing. You know, so that now that there are players that meet that threshold for free agency, those guys are going to want to go to places that have a better chance of winning, or the owners are going to take better care of the players. And that's, you know, that's kind of my idea of it. So it's not, I understand why the caps are in place, and yeah, it would be, I understand that some people are jealous, or, you know, when you see all these big signings, you say like, oh, that money could have been going into everyone's pocket, but that's not the case. It wasn't going to happen. That the model wasn't set up that way, and it wasn't going to change to be set up that way. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, if these guys want to go out and spend a lot of money to make their club better, it rewards the fans. It guys in the locker room get a more experienced veteran teammate. You know, who am I to say that's not right? And, you know, I'm not too concerned with the financial stuff of that, because it's just that really is coming down to an owner that's wanting what's better for his team. And I can't fault the guy for that.
You're the perfect person to ask this question to, because your team is on an extremely strict budget. And yet you guys are number one right now in Eastern Conference, virtual leaders in the Supporters Shield race. So it's not sour grapes to ask the question to you of what's your frustration level with the lack of transfer window action from DC United, because you can always fall back on the, yeah, but we don't need it. We've got what we've got. But I'm going to ask you the question anyway. Is it a situation where in the back of your mind, you're like, look, this, we're going to have to do what we have to do because there's no help coming in?
Well, I mean, we don't really know everything that goes on, you know, behind closed doors. Like, in my opinion, the team has done well and bringing in a bunch of what I call winners.
It's been, you know, fantastic. It's been fantastic, Bob.
Guys that, what's the heck?
I said it's been the way that Casper and Olsen have built this team, using a model of, look, we're bringing in guys who know MLS, there's no adjustment period, and guys that have been successful in MLS has been fantastic in the last 18 months. Like, there's no argument on that. It's been amazing what they've been able to do.
Yeah, and for us, you know, we just use, you always use everything, you know, like you can use that, the lack of, we don't have those DPs or those big signings,
yeah.
But we're going to try to go out and still beat you and send a message that we don't need that. You know, I mean, you can use everything as fuel. And like I said, we got a good group of guys that manage games well, and we can make it tough on anybody. We're tough to play against, and we're hoping that we can solve that puzzle. And, you know, I'm sure we're going to run into some big name, big money guys in the playoffs, but we hope to come out on the right end. Cause at the end of the day, you know, the money's great and all that, but we want to win championships, and we want to win trophies together and have those memories. And, you know, you can make an argument that memories are more valuable.
That's so sweet.
The $7 million, and I'm not the guy that's going to make that argument, but it's out of our control. And I think in a way it's sometimes out of your coaches and their control, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to go out and give it our best and try to get the job done, because I think we're more than capable of doing it. And, you know, there's teams that have, I've never played on a team that had a real expensive guy, you know, an outrageously differential and pay situation. And I've heard horror stories in some places, and, you know, you've heard some real, real great success stories in some places where, you know, there's such a difference that it causes the locker room to split, and it internally eats itself up. We have probably the best locker room I've ever been a part of here in DC. And that's, I think that's part of the reason, because we don't have anything that really separates us like that.
Give me one, without naming any names or teams, horror story.
A horror story
that you heard.
Well, it's guys, you know, it's where coaches lose accountability, where they can tell it. They try to tell a guy to do this or show up, and he just doesn't do it. And, you know, our fine system is like,
yeah, what's that got to do? A guy making $4 million, $4+ million
like,
a year.
Yeah, it's like, like, oh, you're going to charge me $250 for missing a practice? Like, the charter jet was $20,000 to get out of town. Like, that's really not affecting me. But then it just starts, you know, and it's like, well, if you're not holding him accountable, how do you tell another guy that he has to do this? So it kind of makes coaching jobs a little easier. And I think that's why if you look at a lot of the places where these guys have been, and the coaches are usually the one that come and go, and not the players. So that tells you where, yeah, you know, how hard it is.
This will be the second time I blow smoke up you in this conversation, which is a record. That's two more than I've ever done before. But, you know, we're MLS fans, which inherently puts a little chip on our shoulder because we're always looking for approval from other parts of the world that our league is worthy of being watched by those other parts of the world when we shouldn't. And so we've got that going in. And then on top of that, I'm a DC United fan, which is giving me another little chip because everyone likes to crap on RFK, they crap on how there's no big names and they're not a sexy team and how they play negatively or whatever the rip they're going to make against DC United. And it's good to hear your answer, and I also love the answer of, hey, look at the standings. So you can have all of your high-priced guys. I'm going to take success on the field. And by the way, my first year as a season ticket holder, all the matches, for the most part, have been very, very exciting, and I haven't found anything where I'm like, wow, this kind of stinks. This would be better if there was a high-priced DP in the game. I've never thought that. I've always been entertained.
Well, I appreciate that. Hopefully we can continue to do that without giving up four goals and a 6-4 win.
Be nice.
Keep the game exciting. And, you know, I think every coach they all want to go out and get guys that they think would help the team, but it's just got to be the right fit. The guy's got to want to be here. And, you know, I think when people talk about trying to appease the rest of the world and say that our product is great, I mean, I could care less about that. That's like caring about, I don't know, daddy issues or calling ex-girlfriend syndrome or something. That doesn't mean anything to me, and it doesn't mean anything to the guys in the locker room. I think that as the pay is getting better, which it is now, guys don't have to go to Europe. They don't have to go to Europe to get paid, and they don't have to go to Europe to play on the national team anymore. Obviously, some guys want to go over there to, you know, they want to go to show what they can do or maybe go experience a different culture. But it's now the league getting to the point where guys don't need to go to Europe. They don't need to go anywhere else to play at a high level. And players are starting to come here, not just as they retire, but at an earlier age. And that's only going to be better for the league. And you know, hopefully with that will come new stadiums and owners that want to spend a little more money and take care of guys, not just the big name guys, but take care of the, you know, everyone in the locker room a little better.
You brought up the fact that in the playoffs, you'll probably be facing some high priced talent. Bad news for you, Bobby. This weekend, you've got Drogba, and next Thursday, you've got David Villa.
Yeah. Talk about your your difference in players in terms of builds.
What's the bigger challenge? Because I was thinking about that while I was watching you and Sandoval just literally decapitate each other for 90 minutes, and I'm thinking to myself, would he rather have this, or does he have more problems with the slippery Jovenko type guy who you've got to always keep an eye on?
Well, yeah. Well, Giovinco is his own,
of course,
his own little category. Just, yeah, we've got a couple little guys now in the league that are just so slippery that you can't even touch them to you know, it's like you can't even hold them. but yeah, like Drogba's gonna, he's his own beast, man. He's a big guy, and I think that Montreal is very dangerous team. So I'm more focused on them right now than I am on New York. But you look at Villa. Villa's a guy that he's got a lot more. He's got a lot more games with this team he's playing with now. You know, I think I think the only advantage that you could really make is that I've seen a lot more of their games over the years than they've seen of ours.
Yes.
And hopefully, you know, I've learned a lot just by watching game tape of what Via does. But all good forwards find a way to adapt to you quicker than you adapt to them. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's what kind of player he is. But I've played against Drogba a couple times. I know that you can kick him as hard as you want, and he's not going to give you the satisfaction of making a face or a noise. And that's always tough, too, you know, when you can't get into a guy's head or physically dominate him. You know, you gotta figure out other ways to be effective. So it's going to be a pretty good test. And, I mean, that's how the league is now, man. Every week is after that, we're going to have Kai Kamara. I mean, it's just going to keep coming. You know, we got New York again at New York and the Red Bulls, and they got a bunch of new guys. So it's only going to get more interesting, you know, every game each year, because all these new guys are adding, you know, new elements, which is exciting. But it just comes down to whether or not you've done your homework. And we've got a really good staff that prepares us. And, you know, those games are games that I've recorded and going to watch, you know, today. Both of those teams you just named are one of them's playing.
Yeah, Montreal is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll get to watch them and see if, you know, I'm almost more worried about Dominic Oduro, because I know I'll probably be seeing him for sure. And there's, you know, speed is one of those things you can't beat with anything other than being intelligent.
I saw that you took day off. You took Dykstra out on the Potomac. Bagged yourself a nice little catfish. But the question is, did you eat that catfish? Because I'm not sure I would be eating stuff that I'm pulling out of Potomac.
Yeah, we didn't eat it. I didn't keep those. We caught a bunch that day. Good day. And no, you don't need a lot of the stuff that comes out of Potomac, especially bottom feeders. There's stuff that happened back in the 60s and 70s, where before they knew what an environmentalist was, they were dumping things in the Potomac that have contaminated it. And then if you sign up for Potomac alerts, which is really an exciting thing, you should definitely look into that. It tells you every time sewage gets run off into the Potomac.
Nice. Very nice.
So yeah, we did not eat any of those. Although I told Dykstra he could grow like a third nipple or maybe an extra finger if he did eat it, and that might help him, but he passed on the day.
And as I let you go, make sure you are following Bobby on Instagram. He posted that catfish picture. By the way, it's a very, very nice size catch. You did well.
The fish?
Yeah. Well, no, with your wife. Of course the fish. You did well with catching the fish.
Well, I mean, I've grown up fishing, so
all right.
I like to fish. The Potomac has presented a whole new challenge. I'm used to fishing bays and the ocean, so I've had a lot of bad days out there, but I know you're going to hate this, so I'm definitely going to say it. That's why they call it fishing and not catching.
Okay.
So it's not every day that you catch fish, so when you do, you got to enjoy it.
I try to make this a cliche-free show, and yet you've dropped that cliche. And about Dominic Oduro, you basically said you can't teach speed or speed kills. One of the
yeah,
two.
I think I said it a lot worse than that. And if you could edit that part out, I basically said he's fast and he's stupid. And I said I'm slow and smart. It's pretty much a really rude and vain thing. But only you. I can't leave it. I can't get anything by you. So.
If you are, and if you're following again, Bobby on Instagram, there's a great picture of a young Nash Boswell whose facial expression really sums up everybody's reaction to the United Salt Lake match this past weekend as he was taking in the match at RFK.
Yeah, he probably didn't understand why he said, you know, it's a soccer game. I don't know why people keep cheering this much.
Well, Bobby, thank you, man. I appreciate your candor as always, and we will we'll catch up with you maybe before the end of the year, but if not, definitely next year. Oh, well, how many years you got left, do you think? Okay.
I mean,
okay.
I feel really good. I feel really good, man. I think it's going to come down to, you know, I've seen it happen over the years to guys. It happens quick, and it's the one you have to be careful for is having a bad year, because, and I mean as a team, if you're playing well and your team's winning, things are great. What you worry about is when you get older and your team's not having a good season, then they decide to play some young guys to get some experience, because it doesn't mean a whole lot. And now you've become a guy that doesn't start on a bad team. And that's really what you have to worry about. But as far as my level goes, I feel great. I feel like I'm playing better than I have, in the past. And I still have, I can run circles around most of these young guys in terms of energy level and my desire to win. So as long as I have that, I think I'll be okay. And, that's for my agent and the team to figure out.
And I I'm not going to ask you to comment because I feel like it's a huge jinx even to bring it up, but your health has been remarkable throughout your entire career and as you have gotten older. Again, I don't want you to say a word about that. I just wanted to point it out.
Slurpees and milkshakes, man.
Oh, is that what
Slurpees
it is? That's the secret. You're like that woman. She turned 110. They asked her what her secret was, and she says 3 Miller High Lifes a day. That's her secret to living to 110.
Well, there you go. Maybe I'll add that to the mix. But yeah, no, I've been blessed, and I also think I'm a little bit tougher than the.
Guy. Here we go. Humble brag.
Yeah. No. I mean, that's just. I'm not. I also say you have to have muscles to pull them, so I don't really have that problem. I can put myself down or talk myself up. People try to figure out what I do that makes me successful, and I don't think they like how I act, on and off the field, and how I eat and all that stuff. And even though I do take care of myself, so it's they just consider me an anomaly and they leave me alone, which is all I really want.
I think this will be the first and only time you ever refer to this. Bobby Boswell, genetic freak.
Yeah, literally. Like maybe not in a good way.
Yeah, exactly. We don't have to explain it. We just say genetic freak and leave it at that.
Yeah, like leprosy or something.
Exactly. Well, genetic freak. Let's just leave it genetic freak. He's the White Rooney, and he has been very generous with his time. So thank you, Bobby. I appreciate it, man.
Hi, Ro. It's always a pleasure, man.
For more show information, go to pitchpass.com.